You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. The Goo Goo Dolls. Just in case you don't know. Even I know that. 801 here on the West Coast. Joining me from the East Coast is retired Marine Colonel Chris Woodbridge, the editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette and the publisher of Leatherneck Magazine. So, Woody, first of all, Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year, Matt. Doing very well. Thawing out a little bit today. Been really cold for about the last... a couple weeks now.
Yeah, it sucks to be you guys, huh?
Said the man in sunny SoCal.
It's raining today. It's raining in 61, so we all have our crosses to bear. So how do you, are you a cold weather guy? Woody, where were you born and raised?
Born and raised in New York City, Brooklyn, New York, and went to school upstate New York in the in the land of lake effect snow, so I'm kind of a cold weather guy.
Lake effect snow is not exactly the cold weather that you guys got, though, last week.
No, that's
a little bit different, yes?
Yeah, this is what we've had the last couple of weeks has been, record-setting and very dry, cold, not a lot of, no precipitation, no snow, but really, really cold, like hovering in the single digits and, wind chills below zero.
Yeah, that's, I live that in North Dakota cold. Honestly, when it's single digits, in other places, it's double digits below up there. And honestly, it is, it's pretty amazing. You learn quickly why God invented the automatic car starter and the seat heater. Because they're not luxuries. They're things you need in order not to lose your mind.
Oh my God.
Before we talk about the January edition of the Gazette, give me a prediction for the Marine Corps in 2018.
Well, full disclosure, thanks for the heads up. I gave this a bit of thought, and I've actually got three predictions for you.
All right.
The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know, right?
Right.
So, to the good, I think 2018 is going to be the first year where we see real modernization of equipment in the GCE. Not a complete revamp, but the first year of real progress, both at the major system level. We're going to see a selection decision soon for the amphibious combat vehicle of the future. And then I think at the individual equipment level, we're going to see some positive results from the head-to-toe inventory, as it's being called, that the Commandant has directed of individual Marines' equipment. I think that's going to improve our firepower, optics, protection, personal or individual equipment as well.
So recently, the Secretary of Defense kind of put the kibosh on growing the Marine Corps to 194, and he said job one is readiness. Is this what he's talking about?
I think if you define that as if you define modernization as future readiness, yes, I think that's what he's driving towards.
Okay, all right. So so you can't be that wrong when you're synced up with the Secretary of Defense. Bravo, good move on that one, Woody. I like that. But again, a lot of the stuff that we see is still owes its origin to 2003 to 2010 technology, yes, that we see Marines wearing today.
That's correct.
Right.
That's correct.
All right. Okay.
I mean, there's always a
right.
You know, a lag. You know, we fought Desert Storm with 1970s, 80s equipment at best. We went into Iraq and Afghanistan in 2002, 2003 with 1980s equipment. There's always a little bit of a lag, but particularly with regards to our tactical mobility and our amphibious capability, that's been over 40 years since there's been a major change or a major improvement. And I think that the direction on the amphibious combat vehicle is going to be that generational change that's going to drive us through, pun unintended, is going to drive us through about the next 45 years.
Wow. It's certainly, I mean, how many runs have we made at some new form of the AAV? Are we in double digits yet? Certainly.
I don't know that we're in double digits, and that's why I think this is a real game changer, because this is more than a replacement for the existing AAV. It has done two things that I think are going to be transformational, to use a
we love that
buzzword
word.
There.
Yeah, exactly. Let me just tell you, Woody, if you throw in paradigm shift, then
you get bingo at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna do my best not to.
I yell Yahtzee if you use those two phrases at some point while you're making a point.
I don't know. I'll do my best not to, but no, what I was gonna point out is the development of the ACV, again, eight-wheeled, protected, amphibious tactical mobility, that points us towards two other things. Other solutions, besides a single vehicle to the challenges of high water speed and building up combat power ashore. So it reinforces and leverages our partnership with the Navy to solve that problem. But then, maybe more importantly, that platform in development and scheduled to be fielded as it currently is going to allow us to take advantage of some other developmental technologies that I really do think will be significant changes for the infantry force, the motorized mechanized infantry force. Specifically, two things: developments in active protection systems for the vehicle, so not purely relying on the armor protection, but having an active protection system that defeats incoming munitions that could be a catastrophic kill, and then also what, for want of a better term, is truly fifth generation situational awareness, using multispectral optics that are fused to give the crew and the Marines in the back a degree of virtual visibility outside the vehicle, like we've never seen before in our AAVs. I think that's those two things, protection and that situational awareness, are going to be game changers, paradigm shifting or otherwise, for that ground force.
All right. So let me ask you one more question relative to that. Why do you think that it will survive the cut this time when heretofore it has not?
Because the primary reason is because of the really the front end work that our acquisitions folks have done to partner with the industry vendors who are building these vehicles and avoid all the front end costs of developing a vehicle from the ground up. This approach to building this technology really saved the government, the Department of Navy, the Marine Corps, Department of Defense, significant amounts of money on the front end by starting with some existing vehicle designs, vehicles that were in production elsewhere in the world, and then modifying those in order to meet all the Marine Corps' requirements for that vehicle.
So it's probably poorly worded, but you could liken this to purchasing off-the-shelf developed technologies, yes?
Very close, okay. Very close. Right. It's not a pure right. off-the-shelf purchase, because again, those off-the-shelf vehicles, as individual vehicles, did not necessarily meet all the Marine Corps' requirements. But because we're talking about using existing platforms, it avoids a lot of the research and development costs on the front end.
And it's taken us a while to get there. Yes, I mean we did.
That's correct.
The Marine Corps as an institution did not easily give up the unique vehicle and whatnot. But this thing used to be behind our aviation and product improvements, behind heavier tank improvements. Mm-hmm. And so when it fell out all the time. And so I think the economics in terms of getting this done had to drive this decision in this direction, yes? Or it simply would never get done.
That's exactly right. It's unfortunately we're in one of those positions, or maybe fortunately, where if not now, when? We've exhausted an awful lot of other options, done enormous amounts of due diligence, and learned from those efforts, and leveraged our when I say we avoided cost on the front end, the government, the Marine Corps, the Department of the Navy avoided those costs. Those costs were picked up by our partners in industry. Somebody's got to pay that bill, and they did. So this is a level of partnership that heretofore really hadn't been seen on the ground side.
All right. So you articulate that with pretty good confidence. I'd assign you high marks to that, Woody. You've obviously done your research. Okay, so that's the good. All right. Let's work our way to the ugly. Give me the bad.
So the bad, I predict that we may in 2018, I think we're going to see what I will call another Camp Bastion-like event, potentially also involving a significant cyber attack component, and that may in fact lead to a change of mission or near operational failure for one of our forward deployed elements of our SP MAGTAFs and MUs. We have an awful lot of very relatively small detachments. There's a huge potential there, I think, for some operational overextension if we start adding missions to that those forward deployed formations. And my fear, my concern is that despite all the best efforts of some great commanders at every level, we may in fact be presenting a target that again could be attacked, could be exploited here over the next year.
We've that is our business now. It seems like the model that was laid down in Syria after we took the break in Mosul, where we then moved forward controllers, forward observers down mm-hmm. to battalions, was we can sustain this and bring all the firepower the Iraqi forces, along with some Iranian militias, have certainly improved over the years. And that combination proved to be extremely lethal. And it also, I think, served one other important taskmaster, is that we did not have a lot of Americans killed in action and wounded coming back, and the American public watching that video, which I think
is
our critical vulnerability. In my opinion, our center of gravity is just what it was in Vietnam. There's been no change, and that is ugly videotape coming into the living room of Americans who have a low threshold for that kind of stuff. So that model transplanted, again, we saw a little bit of it in Africa, yes, where somebody balled up on somebody, and whether it was premeditated or chance, I guess we'll wait to see what General Dunford's investigation finds, but you're talking about some version of that where somebody masses, overwhelms, and then, God forbid, but you would see some kind of event like that happened to the Rangers in Mogadishu, yes, where they would drag bodies and things like that?
Potentially. That's right. Again, where the, certainly in the whole good bad category, that's in the bad. And I think, again, with the fact that these special purpose MAGTAF and disaggregated, dispersed MEW missions are, in fact, as you put it, our line of business right now. There's a potential when you don't necessarily change the look. Your opponent sees those patterns emerge and will look to exploit those.
Okay. So our own security obviously ought to be in our own crosshairs, and it tends to be, but it's not like people don't make mistakes and people don't fall asleep and people. I think one of the great lessons for me, Iraq and Afghanistan, is you are watched 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yes.
Always.
Yes.
Always. Always, always, always. And if you don't think they're watching, you've deluded yourself, because they are.
That's exactly right. And if you fail to account for that and change that look, change that pattern, then there's going to be a predictable result, unfortunately.
Right. Right. All right, let's talk the ugly.
And maybe this is a kind of a no shitter, too easy one, but I think we may see another major, and by major I mean coming out of the Marine Corps level scandal during this year. That may be another instance similar to Marines United. It may involve some systemic abuse, hazing, sexual assault sort of thing. It may just involve a very high level series or a set of cases. By that I mean senior officer level misconduct. The hashtag Me Too folks are protesting outside the Pentagon today. And I'm not saying there's they don't have there haven't been legitimate issues related to that that have come out in a variety of professions, but to date it hasn't necessarily roosted within DOD or the services more than some usual egregious individual cases, but there's such attention on it right now. I think that if there is a senior level misconduct case, it's going to get national level visibility and get pulled into that same churn that's going on right now, which would be very, very damaging for the reputation of the Marine Corps.
Well, and again, and it adds fuel to the is it Senator Gillibrand who keeps pushing for some other judicial authority to adjudicate sexual assault, sexual harassment cases.
And, that's correct.
And so it lines. Are you surprised at the amount of misconduct, sexual type, that you see among senior officers? And I mean general officers. It doesn't seem like a month that goes by without a high-profile general officer being relieved for some I just saw a two-star, an Army two-star in Europe, I want to say in November, was relieved after sending text messages to the wife of a sergeant telling her that she was hot and things like that. And you're like, what in God's name is going on? Are you surprised at that, Woody, or not?
Disappointed, but not surprised. It's and again, you know, having
right.
watched the movie for quite some time now. It it happens. It happens more than people necessarily would like to think. That's not a defense or a justification at all. It is a you know, again, a flaw of human nature sometimes, and I think that in some cases seniority may lead to perceptions of you know, a double standard or being above the law, or frankly reading your own press and feeling bulletproof.
Interesting. All right, those are the three predictions. So the good, the bad, and the ugly. The any thoughts 2017 in the rearview mirror, any thoughts on it as a year for the Marine Corps? A step in the right direction. Talk to us.
I think it's definitely been a step in the right direction, and focus on kind of two things. You know, again, commandant level interest and initiatives. The first is implementation and development of the, you know, comprehensive force fitness program. That again is, I think, a step in the right direction towards not just combat readiness, but overall fitness of the force. We've paid an awful lot of lip service to that over, you know, over generations, frankly. And this actually puts some resources behind training our Marines like the world class tactical athletes that we say they are. So that's I think a positive from last year coming to fruition. And then also the publication of leader development MAR admin and a more structured program across the Marine Corps with resources, you know, available in a distributed manner, online resources for leaders at every level to develop themselves and their subordinate leaders. So a little bit more of a standardized and resource approach, again, this time in the leader development world.
All right, Chris Woodbridge, my guest here, retired Marine infantryman and currently the editor and publisher of the Gazette and the publisher of Leatherneck magazine. First of all, before we get into the January issue, are there going to be, there always is, what's new, what's going to happen new and interesting at both the Gazette and Leatherneck this year?
Let's see, so on the Gazette side, we're actually changing and what I'll call aligning our themed editions of the magazine. As you know, certain months have focus areas on different elements of the MAGTAF or different warfighting functions. This year we're aligning those more with our professional events for those communities. So, you know, as an example, in April, we partner with the Deputy Commandant for Information Warfare and the Director of C4 for the Marine Corps on a professional event, a dinner with award ceremony for the high-performing Marines in the C4 community. So we're going to be aligning the content of April's Gazette, focusing on C4 and IW information warfare topics with that event. That also dovetails into the operational advisory group in that functional area. So doing more to increase and feed the professional discussion within that community, and then linking that into their governance structure within the Marine Corps and their recognition of performance, superior performance for their Marines.
Okay.
And that's just an example. We'll be doing that with the ground logistics community, the GCE, the intel community throughout the course of the year.
Okay, so you finally got your sync matrix done right then.
Well, yeah, it's the beginnings of a sync matrix. That's a good way to look at it.
Congratulations on that. The Gazette making strides in terms of its own command and control. What about Leatherneck? Anything anything new over there?
Well, yeah, there'll be a couple of interesting things will start to appear in Leatherneck this year, and one of them in particular I think will it's going to be of interest to you and a lot of your listeners as well, and that's we're going to be introducing a recurring column in Leatherneck. My best day in the Corps is the title of the column, and it's going to be very short vignettes, anecdotes from a very wide variety of Marines, veterans, senior leaders, junior Marines who left the Corps or are still on active duty, and in a very very short vignette, just describing their idea, their view of what their best day in the Corps was. And some of those I think are going to be pretty compelling, particularly from some of our combat veterans. And it might be a good opportunity to see if we can reach out to those folks and maybe get them on your show too.
You know, it's interesting. Either this week or next, I'm not sure the logistics. I'm hoping this week, but realistically, it'll probably be next. I'll start. I don't know what I'm going to call it, but it's kind of a battle study. So with the map chip, and then the person who is the principal behind it. The first one I think we're going to have is Chris Bronzy, Lieutenant Colonel Select. Talking about his days as the commanding officer as a company commander in Ramadi in 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines, and just do kind of a battle study, and it'd be along the same lines of that, Woody, and because there's so much rich stuff out there, and I just listened to he was awarded the Bronze Star. His name's Ned Seath. And he was a machine gunner, I want to say in India 3-4 in Vietnam. And he tells a story about they're about to be overrun at night, and he goes underneath the poncho to try to make a gun out of the parts of three guns. And he does it, and he winds up having to clear the bodies off, I want to say twice during the course of the night, because they stack up. I mean, it's John Bazelon stuff. And you're listening to it, and you're thinking, you've got to be kidding me. But it is all the discipline that was taught to guys like you and I when we MNU'd things, when we stood inspections, when we got our nose hairs burned out of our nose, when we paid attention to Irish penance. You know, all the things that you learn about discipline, about inspecting, about reporting, about telling the inspecting officer that what they're going to find here, all that kind of attention to detail, you know, that you learn a lot, much of it you learn in garrison. And I find that interesting, kind of an interesting point as I talk to different Marines. Hey, look, you'll go to war the way you are in garrison. The way you fake it when you go to the field, that's not the way you go to war. If you can't navigate garrison, and if you can't execute inspections, if you can't have standards, if you don't know how to report, if people won't come to you with bad news before you get there, then you're in deep, deep trouble. So I'm like you.
Couldn't agree more.
I'm curious. Can you tell people since you've begun to play the role you played for both the Leatherneck and the Gazette, the stories that you've encountered about the Marine Corps, you must have had the door flung open for you in terms of our culture, our heritage, and our history that come your way. It must be dizzying, I'm sure, some days to hear it.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, both what I'll call formal or developed and informal, you know, from conversations and emails and phone calls with, you know, some of our veteran Marines of all generations on the informal side. And then the formal and more developed side are the volume of published works that come into the office, books that are submitted for review, books that are kind of self-published that are submitted on speculation to try and get some buzz going about them. It really is dizzying is a good word for it. It's a high volume and it's all really high quality too. You know, especially in the case of our combat vets, the range of experiences is really it's pretty humbling. This organization that we're part of can put young men in some really unbelievable circumstances sometimes, and there's something about the organization that just drives them to frankly superhuman action sometimes.
I have my own theory about what it is about the organization, and to me, what it is we look at people and say, yeah, you're not good enough. And we get the what? And so when people look at our mythology and the reality of what our boot camps are, and it has always been in our culture the atypical human being that looks at that and says, yeah, I want a piece of that. Right? The sane among us say, yeah, you know, I'm going to serve, but yeah, that craziness, like somebody else can do that. But the person who looks at that and says, yeah, I want some of that, that is truly a different human being. And then we take it and rough it up beyond that. I'm curious why your thoughts on, I'm sure you're spot on.
I think that's a big part of it. And I also think, through our transformation, entry level training, be it at the recruit depots, be it at OCS, TVS, we inculcate and don't this shouldn't be construed as negative, but we are a guilt and shame based organization in the best of all possible ways, because we inculcate a desire in ourselves to never let the other guys down, not the guys around you, not your chain of command, and probably most powerfully, not those legendary Marines that you read about or the legendary Marines that you know from history or that you know personally from the, you know, from the VFW or the Marine Corps League detachment back home. Those guys that kind of sent you on your way when you were heading off to recruit training. We just inculcate this desire to never let those folks down. And there's a certain amount of guilt and shame involved in that. You know, I don't want to be the one, you know, I don't want to be that guy.
Right.
And it just really is amazing what that does across the organization.
It's really interesting. Our heritage and the effect that has on, I think, everybody when you go to fight. And I can vividly remember flying from Al-Asad into Ramadi as part of the advanced, the ADVON for the division as we ripped with the 82nd Airborne in 2003. So imagine flying in a 53 pitch black. Actually, it wasn't even 53, it was a 47. It's pitch black. You're flying over Western Iraq, Al-Anbar, that you've read so much about, and you're looking down and think, what waits in store for us? And you don't know. And I can vividly remember thinking, like, I don't know how this is all going to turn out, but I knew, do know one thing. I'm not going to fail, you know, anybody around me, you know, and I hope I get to go home, but I'm not going to fail that monument, and I'm not going to fail the guys that depend on me. I think you say it better than I do. It is a combination of the human capital and then our tremendous history, that you go and you're predisposed not to look. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know how I'm going to conduct myself, and I'm going to fight like a Marine. And
exactly.
And that's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. All right. Let's talk about the January edition of the Gazette. What's the theme?
So for the first time in January, we're actually doing a focused edition on Marine Corps Forces Special Operations Command, or MARSOC. Something a little new and different there. We've got a series of articles in the Ideas and Issues section that really talk to various warfighting functions across the special operations component. What's unique about that, and I reference this in my editorial, is we're really not writing there or publishing material there about a part of the Marine Corps. And what I mean by that is those Marines, those forces, special operations officers and special operators, are not available for the Commandant of the Marine Corps to put against any of the requirements levied on our service by the geographic combatant commanders. They belong to the commander of Special Operations Command.
Right.
That's where they are sourced through into the various AORs or theaters around the world. So they wear the uniform. They meet the standards that the Marine Corps has set forth for the service. They are paid by the Marine Corps, but they are available only to Special Operations Command. So a little bit of a different flavor for that focus, but much of what's written in that section of January's magazine is about innovation and how MARSOC is approaching their future and the future of the Marine Corps' contribution to the special operations community.
All right, I have a couple opinion questions for you, and then we'll pull apart the issue. Phil Smith was on, I don't know, a week or so ago, and was talking a week ago tomorrow, and was talking to me about his prediction for 2018, and he thought that the Marine Corps would embrace in its MUSE and even in its UDP program more SF type missions. That advising would become more of a thing in the Marine Corps. That you would see, MUSE in particular, begin to embrace missions that have been outside what the Marine Corps has heretofore embraced. Your thoughts on that?
I don't necessarily disagree with that, and it's not it's not purely a. A semantics issue of the, what are special operations,
right,
or special forces missions. That's pretty well defined, and specifically the building partner capacity,
right,
mission, or foreign internal defense mission, that drives advising or advisor trainer activities. It crosses over into both special operations and general purpose force missions, and in a lot of ways, the more general purpose forces that assume some of those requirements for building partner capacity, that depressurizes what special operations forces are required to do. So the more that the Marine Corps does, the less of it MARSOC and the other components of Special Operations Command, particularly Army Special Operations Forces, who it is one of their core missions to do foreign internal defense and building partner capacity. It allows them now to reduce their tempo and focus on other missions. And I happen to know that that is a priority for both the Secretary of Defense and for the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low Intensity Conflict to look at reducing the high volume employment of those forces that have become the trend over the last 10 to 15 years. And that involves more of those missions migrating into the general purpose forces, both across the services. So yeah, I don't disagree with that at all, and that in turn drives some of the training and resourcing requirements for those Marine forces going forward.
An email question, Mac. I recall when Phil Smith was on either the last time or the time before, a discussion you had about the impact of standing up Special Operation MARSOC, and its drain of very, very many talented young leaders in the Marine Corps and the institutional impact that had on our operating forces. I'm curious about Chris's opinion on all this. Are we beyond that, where we've staffed it and now we're talking about simply the replacements and continual staffing of it, which is a much less costly bill to the operating forces today? His thoughts on that. Yeah, we had an interesting conversation about the impact institutionally of that kind of drain of talent as you stand an organization like that up. Your thoughts on that?
No, absolutely a valid point, and there was a degree of what we'll call a bathtub effect,
right.
Some specific communities, and we're talking about the particularly the force reconnaissance community, the division level reconnaissance community, and some of our other niche intel capabilities were siphoned off structure spaces and individual Marines because of their qualifications, talent, and frankly their career desires were channeled over in order to establish the special operations component for the Marine Corps, those forces. I think that has largely righted itself in that we've reconstituted the organic Marine Corps capacity for division and force reconnaissance and those other specific MOS areas, but where there's still a structure bill to be paid is what I'll call the overhead bill for providing a special operations component to U.S. Special Operations Command. There is an overhead bill primarily in field grade officers and some senior enlisted and warrant officer grades that has to be paid to the headquarters of SOCOM in Tampa and to other joint staff positions in D.C. That is a drain on the Marine Corps. Again, I think it's largely righted itself in that we've increased structure in those areas so that we can again absorb that those external requirements without cutting too deeply into the organic structure and the organic capabilities of the Marine Corps. But it's still there,
right.
And like all good deeds, there's a potential for for punishment on the back end, for mission creep, and for those requirements to potentially grow, those external structure requirements to grow. So there's a constant tension there that has to be monitored.
Yeah, that is no small concern either, because you're talking about the people that tend to gravitate there are your best and brightest. And so it has a trickle down effect that, you know, people bump up to fill spots, which means, you know, there's a lesser guy leading the squad. There's a lesser guy leading the platoon. And that's not a small issue. And again, but I think we're talking about it's infinitely more manageable now. Yes.
Yes. Yes. As it stands right now, it is more manageable. However, it is not without cost,
right,
to the Marine Corps as a service.
Another email. Matt, come on, ask the obvious question. Did Woody watch the football game last night? What did he think? And then signed, Roll Tide.
Okay, I got to put myself on report. I taped the game last night. Oh. I had another commitment. I wasn't able to park myself in front of the TV and watch it, so I did not get a chance to see that. I'd like to know how many people, though, actually watched the Division III championship between JMU and North Dakota State earlier over the weekend, because that's where the real game is played.
Why are you telling me?
No, I have a niece who goes to JMU, and she was lucky enough to be at the game.
Oh, I'll tell you, I lived up in North Dakota, and so North Dakota has no professional sports teams, and so
yep,
they take incredible pride in their the University of North Dakota has is tied for the most Division I men's hockey championships with University of Michigan. They take tremendous pride in that. And then now, North Dakota State University in the FCS championship, but they have won, I think it's 6 out of 7 now. I mean, it's an incredible run they've been on. And James Madison has been the person they've lost the last championships to. So it's an incredible run. But no, you're absolutely right. I'll tell you what, it's great football too. If you didn't see it on Saturday, that was a great game. But I'll tell you what, you have a treat in store. Last night's game was unbelievable. High drama. Down in Atlanta, so great stuff. So anyway,
no small rivalry going on there either.
Oh my God, are you kidding me? That was but it was college football. I mean, the Rose Bowl, Oklahoma and Georgia was an incredible game. I thought one of the best games I've ever seen in my life. And then less than a week later, spoiler alert here. I mean, Alabama brings in a true freshman who's never started a game to play, and yeah, think about that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it was awesome. Give us a couple articles that you like in this month's Gazette. Not that you don't like them all, but tell me something to point me in the right direction.
Let's see. So there's a couple interesting things that I'll point out. I'm just gonna focus on two for you.
Okay.
And they're not in the MARSOC lane. Under PME, there's a really just a one page article that was developed by the Lejeune Leadership Institute at Marine Corps University.
Wow.
and one of the writers at Marine Corps History Division. And this is actually the second in a series that we're going to be publishing of case study PMEs. So here's if you recall, we published one on General O.P. Smith and the logistics effort at Chosin Reservoir back in November.
Okay, and hold on, stop. For those of you who haven't seen that, go look it up and go read it, and then. You can go on YouTube, and there's a documentary. I want to say it's 56 minutes. I can't remember who
mm-hmm.
did it, but it's extremely well done. It does a little bit more than most in terms of the lead up and Smith's approach to the movement into the Valley of Udom Knee, as opposed to what he was being told by General MacArthur's staff and to get moving, and General Allman's staff as well. So before Woody goes any further, awesome stuff in terms of military decision and near and dear to my heart, decision making, in high stress, compressed time situations, and General Smith's, devotion to logistics that ultimately saved the 1st Marine Division from destruction.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, a great, great historical case study.
Oh,
and this is in January. You've got the second in that series. The actual published piece is just a one pager, kind of the storefront introduction that that then points the reader to some online resources from the Lejeune Leadership Institute. But this case study is about the effort by the staff of one Army general, Corps of Engineers general, charged with reducing or eliminating, and the word they use is eradicating, the risks of yellow fever and malaria to the construction force building the Panama Canal. The linkage in this case study is whether those same methods can be used to eradicate, as defined, the behavioral problems that we may face in the Marine Corps. So things like you know, high risk self-destructive behavior on leave and liberty, sexual assault, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, and also online behavior, negative online behavior. So you read the case study, you look at the methods, intrusive leadership, symptom surveillance, and you know, what might be considered kind of draconian measures that were used to preserve the force in Panama, building the canal. And then the case study is really whether and which of those can be applied to these behavioral scourges, if you will. The title of the article is How to Eradicate a Scourge.
I want to talk to me. This is another opinion question. Talk to me about the scourge. Is it? It's certainly, you and I have seen scourges, okay, because we're old guys. Drunken, brawling scourges. And when one of the dirty secrets of the Marine Corps was that, you know, guys joined to do that. You know, people heard the stories of Libo in the Philippines. To go drink and fight around the globe were part of the lore of the Marine Corps that young men grew up with, not when they were little, but when you were sitting in somebody's garage and they were telling stories, and they didn't tell them, because they were men of a different generation, they didn't tell them in great detail, but they alluded to, oh, you'll see things you've never seen there. And it was part of the mystique of the Marine Corps. Is it social media that dials up? I mean, ultimately, Marines United is going to be less than 50 active duty Marines weaponizing that information. Yet the reverberation of that, Woody, as amplified through social media, is crazy in terms of, you know, here you have the Commandant standing there taking facial shots before the investigation's even done, because of the firestorm whipped up by social media. I guess it shouldn't be surprising. It is the modern world we live in. Do our leadership styles have to adjust to weather that? Because the truth may be fundamentally different. Just in the last 48 hours, what's that guy's name? Ball, the father. He's in Russia, talking about that the Lakers have quit on Luke Walton, who was the assistant coach of the Golden State Warriors when they won 25 straight games and Steve Kerr wasn't around. And he's, you know, and so he's an idiot as a father, but yet he's in the media all the time now because I guess people click on him, and that's what drives not our news, but that's what drives the entertainment that goes on websites. And so does the lens through which we view these things have to be adjusted to say, everybody take a breath, let's survive the social media tsunami, and then we'll get to the truth, and then we'll do the right thing? Because it certainly doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like we're overreacting to a much more tame Marine Corps than you and I walked into. And does any of that make sense?
I think I understand where you're going. I'd offer two things. First, you know, just it's an environmental issue. The fact is the environment has changed, and for all the reasons that you laid out, modern social media, internet-based communications are an accelerant to just about everything that goes on, be it photographs, be it interaction on social media platforms, film, what have you. It in this environment, it makes it spread faster and have a more much more obvious, visible impact. Not unlike the way the jungle environment, weather, and close quarters and poor sanitation of Panama created an environment that could literally destroy a force with disease. That's involved in a strategic effort to build a canal. So there's a little bit of parallelism there. The environment makes it worse. But the second point I'd make is I don't think because of the environment and because of much larger social changes, I don't think we can ever go back to a business as usual, boys will be boys sort of mentality. It just ignores current realities. And folks, other guys, old guys or not, can push back and say, oh, it's just we got to get over this, and everything will be fine. I don't think that's the case. I think that ignores just some fundamental changes in the world right now. And we can embrace them. We can like it. We can not like it. We can lament it all we want, but we have to operate in that environment.
Interesting. Okay, so you have that the Panama Canal thing. Give me another one to read.
Let's see. The one other that I'll point out is we ran a series of what I call future war stories that are essentially military themed science fiction, near term, near future science fiction as a vehicle to get other folks thinking about future capabilities and operating concepts, etc. So what you've got in January is actually second part of a two-part story by retired Navy officer Commander Philip Purnell. Now, the hardcore science fiction fans of the world will recognize that last name because his dad was Jerry Purnell, was one of the most published, widely published science fiction authors of the late 60s and 70s. But he's writing a really very well constructed story about future operations in marine operations in an amphibious expeditionary environment. And we're not talking about Star Trek. There are no transporters or phasers or things of that nature. This is looking at the impacts of current developmental technology and capabilities and the impact of those on how Marines operate, good, bad, and other, as far as how Marines are operating.
Wow.
And this is a complement to the 13-part series that we'd run during 2017 by Major Vic Rubel. So we're gonna look to continue that style, if you will, of future war stories periodically throughout next year.
Final question. Are you in? What kind of feedback do you get relative to the fiction? because it certainly is the Gazette has embraced more of it than I certainly have ever seen in my lifetime. What kind of feedback do you get on it? Obviously, it must be positive.
Getting very good feedback, particularly from inside the Marine Corps, from the folks who are charged with being our lead agent for innovation at the Warfighting Lab and at CD&I, etc. But also a lot of really positive feedback from outside the Marine Corps, from readers that are looking at what I'll term kind of loosely military futurists,
mm-hmm.
Both folks that are associated with the defense establishment, at the Center for Naval Analysis and Office of Naval Research, but then folks who are not really associated with the military directly, but are think tank and policy wonk kind of folks in the not just in D.C. but really across the U.S. and actually worldwide. I had some contact with folks in the U.K. not too long ago, and as well as Australia about this. So it's kind of casting the net as wide as possible to capture as much as many ideas as we can in that future war realm.
Yeah, we don't normally socialize with that group of weirdos that you're talking about.
No, it's a very very different crowd,
right.
I'm looking at a couple different ways we might be able to build on that in the future. Again, to get fresh thinking, fresh set of eyes on what it is that we do.
Chris Woodbridge, Colonel, United States Marine Corps, retired editor publisher of the Gazette, publisher of Leatherneck Magazine, has not watched the NCAA Division I College Football Championship, so don't spoil it for him. Great game, Woody, in case you haven't heard.
I know the results, I just got to see the details.
it's awesome. And I'll tell you what, in the play that wins the game, what's most impressive is the composure of a true freshman and his decision-making ability and ability to execute in all that cacophony of hysteria. that young man.
Cool under fire. That's very admirable.
Well, you know what? And again, I don't know about you, but when I interviewed lieutenants, I used to love, and I thought they were better leaders, guys who've been captains of sports teams. They were BC students. And they were pretty normal human beings, and I liked them if they had a little bit of a smart mouth, which not dumbass smart mouth, but kind of a quick-witted person, was a sign of an active brain, and that told me that they knew how to compete against a dynamic environment. And what that young man does as a true freshman is extremely impressive last night in terms of decision making under high stress situations. So you'll have very, very
well for his good for his good and for the good of the team. I'm hoping it's not a one off, and that
right, I agree.
That he can keep that kind of performance up for the next 4 years.
And I'll tell you what, in day and age when we don't discuss religion because it's deemed by both the media centers of Los Angeles and New York as something that's passé, he says, he starts to be interviewed by ESPN, and then he stops and goes, oh, wait, my mom and dad will get mad at me. Praise be to God who gives me everything, I have. And so then he gets interviewed as they present the award. They ask him about the game-winning score, and he says it and the interview is going over the sound system inside the Mercedes-Benz Dome or whatever they call it down there. And there's this huge roar that comes from the crowd, and you think, wow, a little bit. America is a lot different than the American media. And you get a little bit of taste of that as well. But it's fun watching, and you'll certainly enjoy it. Thank you very much for doing this again, Woody. I always enjoy your opinions and your insight. I enjoyed the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I wrote them down just so you know. So you'll be
We'll keep score on that.
At some point, you'll be held responsible. But thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, Mac. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Chris Woodbridge, the editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette. We'll take a quick break. Gunner's is hopefully going to join us next. He actually sent an email, a text message last night, so he's recovering. More of this fine program coming up next on a Tuesday edition right here. Don't touch that dial. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.